3 minutes, 180 seconds ago on that social media site established by Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook, Alan Stevens shared a photograph which says, "This photo is a new one on me. He had an amazing childhood thanks to Tom Baker and Terry Nation." Smiley face. Becky, it's fair to say you're a Who fan, are you not?
Yes, I am, very much.
Yeah. So you're waiting with interest to find out what this Doctor Who scholar, Alan Stevens, creator behind Caldor City and worker with many Whovian people in times past, including, of course, the Celestial Toy Room and, of course, Warp Warp, which as a Whovian you know is the sound that the TARDIS actually makes, Warp Warp. Ben, you're less interested, really. You stopped after David Tennant.
Yeah, I've retired.
He's retired from Who? Retired from life? Never mind. Alan Stevens. Exactly. Maniacal laughter already.
That's a Douglas Adams, you know, wasn't it? Once you're tired of such and such, you're tired. And the suicide rate went up like 500%. Yeah. Once you're tired of Doctor Who, you're tired of life.
So let's move on, because Alan, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. We're ready for that whole thing. We've started off with a whole range of other bits. Is Fiona there with you as well?
No, she's not at the moment.
That's all right. Well,
she's off doing her stuff.
Okay. Well, Alan, the time has now arrived. Well, unless you'd like to hear what Becky has thought of the series so far.
Oh no. Let's hear what Becky thinks.
Okay. So I actually quite like Jodie Whittaker. I think she has like that certain quirkiness that we find in all the Doctors, and I think it's interesting. She's fun to watch on screen. Writing-wise, the first episode specifically, I didn't understand why the nan, what was her name, Grace, had to die. I didn't get that bit, but I do like the premise of it and where it's going. And we saw in the second episode how the two episodes are actually connected. So I don't know, I'm just excited to see more.
What Alan thinks, really. I mean, I know, because at the end of the day, I can tell the entire households of the Moffats, the T. Davises, they'll be listening in at this particular moment or downloading the podcast saying, yeah, this is all well and good, but what does Alan Stevens make of the whole thing? We already know Robin Pierce isn't a fan. Never mind. Carry on, Alan.
No, Robin Pierce hates it, doesn't he? Who was the last person who spoke?
Becky,
that's a very interesting observation there. I was very impressed by that, by the way. Well done.
And he doesn't give praise easily, let's be honest. I mean, Ben knows Alan sufficiently to say that he's not one who sort of passes compliments out as if they were confetti, really.
Now, there's a question there. Why did Grace have to die? The reason Grace had to die was because we have the Doctor and three companions, which is a huge amount of companions for a show set in the 21st century. Back in the 1960s, the reason why the Doctor had three companions was because of the way they filmed it. They filmed it as live. So Ian and Barbara would be on one set, and the Doctor and Susan would be on the other, so they'd have someone to talk to. And then we would cut back to Ian and Barbara to the Doctor and Susan, and then when they were filming one lot, the other person would move to another set, and then they would cut back. And that's why it was done. It was done so they didn't have to edit the videotape, because videotapes were £400. And if you had more than four edits on it, you couldn't really reuse it again. And £400 in 1963 was an enormous amount of money. I can't do the inflation thing, but we're talking about thousands of pounds here. When editing techniques improved, the amount of companions reduced. So by 1968, we had two companions in the Doctor, and by the 1970s, we had one companion in the Doctor, because editing was much easier. When John Nathan Turner took over in the 1980s, he brought back the large companion ensemble, and that didn't really work, and he ended up going back to the Doctor and a companion again. Quite why Chris Chibnall has introduced three companions in the Doctor, I don't know, because it seems like some of the characters are a bit redundant. So the reason why Grace died was because, A, they needed to introduce a white character into a black family, and the only way they could do that was by saying that, you know, Grace was originally a nurse to Graham, and Graham then decided to marry her, and then she died. And also because it cuts down on the companions, but still, three companions and one Doctor are too many. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense.
Thank you. I like you. You're great.
Thank you.
I love everyone who agrees with me.
These are important things. So, I mean, Ben, are you tempted at all to check out the Jodie Whittaker era? I mean, only 8 more episodes to go now in a Christmas special?
Maybe, potentially. I think I'll wait and hear what other feedback is like over the coming weeks, I think, before making my mark.
Although Alan has provided a very cogent and coherent explanation in terms of why the Doctor has more than just, and why Grace had to die, he hasn't really given us his views on the 2 episodes himself. Alan, the floor is now yours.
Okay. Well, Chris Chibnall is not my favourite writer.
Sorry.
I feel he is the worst writer ever to have worked on Doctor Who. Ever. I would say that the acting is very good. I would say that Jodie is very good. I like her very much. She's a very attractive character. She plays it very well. I think that the filming, you know, the actual direction is beautiful. There's some gorgeous locations. It looks great. Everything is great except the writing, which is awful. I mean, really terrible. Because the last 2 episodes have been written by Chris Chibnall. And I think back in 1980, was it 88 or 87 or 86, he appeared on a BBC show where he attacked Pip and Jane Baker, who were not regarded as the greatest writers of Doctor Who at that time. He was about 17 or 18 at the time. And it's bizarre because he's actually made Pip and Jane Baker look fantastic in comparison. I just don't think he's very good. Why do I not think he's very good? I think he's it's too much dialogue. It's like they looked at the Moffat era and said, well, the reason why all audiences were turned off by that and where the ratings dropped down to about 5 or 6 million from, you know, 7 or 7.5 million was because Moffat was being too complex or indeed, you know, too confusing. And they've tried to sort of pare it down so you understand exactly what's happening from scene to scene. Well, they've done that, but they've done it to such a point that I actually become bored and start thinking about something else. And yet, even when I come back to the story, I still understand it. So I don't think, you know, there's too much explanation and not enough showing, even though the visuals are fantastic. The other issue is there's too many companions, and also there's a lot of stuff that, you know, which is a problem with modern Doctor Who, which has gone back since 2005, which is the science is completely ridiculous. They appear in space, and you hear the Doctor's hair flowing in the beautiful, you know, the kind of air.
She should have been exploding because of the pressure differentials. They couldn't survive in space.
This is the thing again. That's wrong. They wouldn't have exploded. I mean, I know there's films where people turn in space and explode. What would actually happen was that they would instantly freeze, and also their lungs would probably sucked out of their mouth because of the, you know...
Not pleasant either way, really.
No. But they wouldn't actually have exploded. But in the Doctor Who, when they appear in space, they just kind of like look surprised. Oh dear, we're in space. And luckily we've now been picked up by a grapple and taken back to a planet, which has been shifted in location. But I don't think there was ever actually any explanation as to why the planet had shifted in location. A bit like how the Doctor travels, you know. There's an argument on my Facebook page concerning this, in that the episode 1 consists of the Doctor crashing through the roof of a railway carriage and getting up and solving the mystery or whatever because she'd fallen out of the TARDIS, which was in orbit. So we'd worked out, I looked this up, apparently, you know, everything travels at a particular rate, whatever, and she must have been traveling 120 miles an hour. So she traveled 120 miles an hour, smashes through the roof of the train, not through the bottom of the train, gets up there to scratch, and then, you know, solves the problem. And no one actually says, hang on, hey, where did you come from? What are you doing here? What did you do roof of that train? While she's an alien, that's okay, you know. Well, it isn't okay, really, is it? I mean, is there such a point where you are kind of pulled out of a drama, but you're suddenly thinking about, well, how is it that, you know, she survives a 7-mile fall at 120 miles an hour and smashes through the top of a railway carriage and is fine, and they were concerned about her being on the top of a crane and falling. Well, clearly, if she can survive an earlier fall, then, you know, falling from the crane of a train, just from the crane of a, onto the floor, would just mean she would bounce, wouldn't it? I mean, hey, you're debasing your currency here, aren't you? You're saying, well, she can do this here, but here we should be concerned about her, what's going to happen. And also you've got a situation where if you have a title character, Doctor Who, she isn't going to be killed in episode one, is she? Because we know there are another 9 episodes to go along.
Know. Remember Blake 7?
How does that work? Go on, sorry.
Well, they killed Blake after the second season, basically. Although not in episode one, admittedly.
Well, no, Blake disappeared at the end of season two. And at the end of season four, he was killed. The thing about Blake 7 is when someone was killed, they didn't come back. And we've... This is a different kind of argument, really. I mean, there is a problem with Doctor Who where, you know the central character isn't going to get killed, is he? The companions could be killed. S/HE.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Did you say you had a response, Becky, in terms of
I did. In terms of her falling through the roof, I feel like the reason, remember, she's still got the regeneration energy inside of her at that point, so she's still in the midst of regenerating, much like how River Song in Let's Kill Hitler gets shot and she just like bursts the regeneration energy out of her. I think that might be why.
That did cross my mind, I must admit.
She did.
Now, that is a very good explanation, and again, that's a smart part, but I don't think that's actually the answer. And the reason I say that is because Chris Chibnall is doing is he's drawing on the formula of 21st century Doctor Who. And if you go to, for example, The End of Time, the Doctor is on a spaceship and it's zooming along and he jumps from the spaceship and falls several hundred feet, smashes through a glass window and lands on concrete, gets up, he has a few cuts from the glass, no bruises apparently from the huge impact of landing on concrete, and he's okay. And there's another story called The Widow, the Witch in the Wardrobe. Do you remember that one? It was a Christmas special.
Classic where
with Matt Smith, where he jumps out of a spaceship, apparently in orbit, and magically comes towards the Earth.
It was a pointless episode with Alexander Armstrong. What's more to it, love?
And puts on an impact suit and hits the planet, Earth, and creates a crater, quite widely creates a crater, and survives that as well. So I think it's this idea... But yeah, the Doctor somehow can bounce, or can survive these crashes.
Bounce.
You can say, within this instance, you can say there is a regenerative energy, and the Doctor cut his hand off, and what was the story called? The Christmas Invasion, and regenerated get back. So perhaps as she fell through the thing, that she was regenerated. But if she's hitting at that speed, why didn't she go through the floor of the train?
You see, my concern, Alan, is a little bit more mundane. I was bemused by how the police officer and, of course, her school friend, they soon to become companions, managed to magically transport themselves from the Derbyshire hillside or the Sheffield Hills, etc., instantly onto the train without hardly seconds going by. I thought instant transportation devices didn't occur.
Well, I think that... that's a very good point. I think there was a narrative problem there. I mean, I was watching it, and they said, well, go in and get your bike. And he goes in and gets his bike.
Very speedy bike, then, obviously.
Which is, first of all, I'd like to put out the point is, I don't in any way... there's various people who have the same thing about political correctness and it's black people and Asian people and they shouldn't be on... Mm. That's wrong. I have no problem with a doctor having a companion who is black or Asian, and I have no problem with a doctor being... a woman, I think, is an interesting idea. It could be, if taken the right direction and written correctly, could be really, really good. I have no problem with that at all. But you're quite correct in that he throws his bicycle over the cliff.
He doesn't even wear a crash helmet. That's the other thing. Where's the health and safety with that?
Well, he's on grass, so I can accept that. He's on grass, okay? But he throws the bike, and then he goes in to see the bike and sees up in a tree, and the next minute, his grandmother and grandfather are on the train. And I thought, well, why isn't he there, and also how is this taking place in the same time frame as them being... You're right, it seemed very bizarre editing, really.
I can tell what you'll be doing tonight, Ben Lewis, accessing the iPlayer and checking out these things.
I feel like I'll have to wait and hear what the other reviews are like.
Yeah, there was that weird brief moment. I feel like it was briefly mentioned they were on the cliff, like looking down at the bike.
Yeah.
And Bradley Walsh's character goes, oh, you're going to have to get yourself because we've got our train to catch. And then
the next station?
Minute, I don't even know, but the next minute they're on the train. Yeah. But for me, I feel like Bradley Walsh is playing Bradley Walsh.
It's the chase.
So he's just, he's not playing a character, he's just playing himself in Doctor Who. Like,
so did Ken Dodd.
I just don't understand his purpose whatsoever. Like, the, I don't remember, I think it's Ryan, is his name Ryan?
Yeah.
He's like meant to be like a mechanic and stuff like that, so I could understand his purpose. Yeah. Yaz, not really sure yet, but Bradley Walsh literally serves no purpose whatsoever.
Well, I mean, again, I think that's fair, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, Bradley Walsh apparently has done a game. I don't watch TV anymore. Bradley Walsh apparently has done a game show. And he
the Chase. In
a, yeah, yeah. I've never watched it. And apparently, yeah, but I watched Bradley Walsh. I can't say I don't like him. Yeah, you're saying that he's basically playing Bradley Walsh. Well, I don't know. I mean, okay, if he's playing Bradley Walsh, then I kind of like Bradley Walsh. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. But I understand he's adding that comedic effect to it. But realistically, in Doctor Who world, he is this old man who can't really keep up with all the young'uns.
What, like Bernard Cribbins?
Go on, that's interesting.
You can't really keep up with all the young'uns. And yeah. I'm not sure I can see longevity-wise his purpose.
Well,
are you being ageist there?
No. I think she's got a very good point here. She's saying that I see a lot of people. I'm 52.
No.
And I see a lot of people of a similar age saying, you know, millennials, what are they going on about?
Snowflake generation.
Yeah. And I think, well, hang on a second, you're a punk rocker in 1977. Mm. So I kind of feel. And I've recently been watching a series called Crown Court, which, involves. There was a guy on recently who'd blown up a print works, and he was he was a Marxist, and there was people who were hippies and whatever. And there's a kind of prejudice. I mean, I think Crank Court is actually extremely good, but there's a kind of prejudice there from the older generation against the younger generation, which I'm seeing now. And I'm thinking, hang on, did the people who blew up the print works are now saying, well, these new millennials, they're not? It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't feel that prejudice. But what you're saying here, and I absolutely understand, you're saying that, Bradley Walsh seems perhaps out of sync with the kind of new millennial idea. And yet, he also married a black nurse. And perhaps the next episode, which is concerning Rosa Parks, somehow he'll be crassly, or I don't know, or otherwise involved.
He'll say, Rosa, you should sit on that bus no matter what. Go on, Rosa.
Sit on that bus. And sit down.
Exactly.
Says the White Doctor. Yeah.
So, The Woman Who Fell to Earth, marks out of 10, please, from you, Alan.
The Woman Who Fell to Earth.
Yes.
Well, it's a different one, because I would say, I have no objection to Jodie Welsh. What's her name?
Whittaker.
Sorry, I've been drinking
Lord,
an extra beer recently, so it could be explanation. And also, I've got to do an article tomorrow, or an interview tomorrow, about The Prisoner, and that's enough to mess anyone's brains up. So I apologise.
We want the information, Alan. We want the information.
Yeah, absolutely. My information is this. Jodie Whittaker, I think, is a 10 out of 10. Love her. Mm. Right? Good-looking woman, good actress, doing a smashing job as Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Script-wise, I would say 4.
Becky.
Now, the second story,
we'll let Becky give a mark for Woman Who Fell to Earth first. Go on, Becky.
Just because I would agree with you about the script, I would say overall. Maybe a 6.
Yeah,
just the
I'm staying with 7.2. Alan,
okay, so when she's saying overall, she means that the filmography and the direction and the acting, you're saying, would give a 6, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'm with you. I like her. He's great.
There we are. Ben and I will leave you alone next time and you can actually continue with the rest of the programme. But Ilana Rain is waiting, so let's move on to... We'll go first with you for this one, The Ghost Monument. Your marks out of 10, please, Becky.
7.
And Alan?
Well, judging on the Becky-o-meter, I would agree. The script, again, was not very good. The filmography was very nice.
It's nice to have an electromagnetic pulse that can actually take out the robots but leave all the other electrical devices.
Yeah, I know. That's rubbish. Absolutely. In fact, here's this game. There's no infrastructure behind it. And then the guy says, well, I'll kill you if you don't let us win. And he goes, okay, you'll win. Well, when you're beginning, you know, it's just insane, isn't it? I mean, great casting. Beautiful location,
yes.
Great direction.
Yes.
All the acting was great. But the script was really, really poor. Though better than last week's episode.
Yeah.
Scores on the doors from our executive producer Ryan, who's been listening presumably to actually work through this. So Ryan, is he going to give us a, because you are on a 7, I think, for both of them, aren't we, in terms of Doctor Who's?
I'm on an 8.
8. 8 for both of them. There we are, you see. And that's what makes the Who universe just that little bit more special. Ben, would you be checking out those episodes?
Yeah, I might do.
Well, look, just before you cut me off.
You've had 17 minutes, Alan.
There's a series called Westworld, mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
And I recorded it in June. I didn't watch it. I've just watched it, all 10 episodes in line. That is fantastic.
It is.
If you want to see a great show, beautifully made, beautifully acted, beautifully written, 10 out of 10 on all scores, Westworld is the show, okay?
That's pretty much, we're in agreement. Alan, are you back again in fortnight to give us your views on the next two episodes of the Whittaker series of Doctor Who?
A fortnight, yeah, sure.
I'll do two at a time. You know, I can't have too much of a good thing, really. Actually, you won't be back then, will you?
We might have a phone link with you. You cannot have too much of a good thing.
Alan, we'll speak to you then.
Cheers, mate.
And we will hold our heads up high with Argent as we say farewell to Rod Argent and hello to director and producer extraordinaire Ilana Raine, somewhere in a car, somewhere in Los Angeles. How are you, Ilana?
I'm great. I'm actually in the car with my co-writer and producer, Brian, and one of my stars, J-Ro. We're driving to the venue for our after party.
No, you said, I thought the premiere was actually tomorrow, Thursday, October the 18th at 9 p.m. So are you prepping with a 24-hour party beforehand?
No. The premiere is totally tomorrow, but we just have to, do a little scan of the location first. But, so it's all very exciting.
Well, that makes sense. Now, in the studio, we have Ben Lewis, who is a keen cineast and regularly communicates with Richard Fitzwilliams about matters relating to the cinema, etc. Not so much a fan of Doctor Who, or maybe it's Alan Stevens, I don't know. Anyway, Ben is with us. We've also got Becky, who is a tremendous science fiction-oriented soul who's actually in the fifth week of her time here at the University of Lincoln, the fifth week of 3 years to go, which is wonderful. So would you like to share with us what Perception is all about as a feature film, please, Ilana?
Sure. Well, hi, Ben and Becky. And so it's a psychological thriller, and it's about a psychic who meets a businessman who is desperate to connect with his dead wife. So
a standard run-of-the-mill soap opera plot in many ways, basically. So nothing too sort of ecstatic with respect to that. That was great. Ilana, hopefully we'll have a word with Brian and indeed J-Ro as the thing manifests itself. But just describe where exactly you are in the land that we call Hollywood. Are you still there, Ilana? Have we lost you? Yes, sorry. Yeah, whereabouts are you in Los Angeles?
We're driving in downtown Los Angeles, so we're very close to the theater, which is a fantastic venue. It's the LA Live Regal Cinemas. It's just, world-class, state-of-the-art projection and sound, so we're just thrilled that we get to premiere at this theater. And, DTLA it's its 10th year, the film festival. And, downtown L.A. is very interesting. It's going through a lot of changes, and it's gentrifying rather rapidly. But, we're just, there's a lot of energy here, too, so it's really nice.
We'll just give a few name checks to the cast, because I always, as you know, Ilana, like to give full credit to Wes Ramsey, Meera Rohit Kumbani, Caitlin Maynor, J-Ro, as we mentioned, travelling in the car with the producer and director. That can't be bad. Max Jenkins.
That's right.
And V. Kumari, as you said, produced by Brian Smith, Ilana Raine, and B.D. Gunnell, which is nice. Ben, questions from yourself, please.
Yeah, so Ilana, what kind of got you into sort of the film industry, when you first started out? What kind of almost gave you your break? And what was your first project?
Yeah. Well, I started out many years ago in the New York art world, primarily as a photographer, and then I transitioned to making films, short films and documentaries. And, I've always been a true believer sci-fi fan. And, there's always been a thread that runs through my films of that. And, I moved to LA about 5 years ago wanting to just make a feature and go bigger. And, having a psychological thriller that dips into the supernatural, I guess you could say, was as close as I could get to making a science fiction film without it being science fiction in the sense of, we question reality and, not everything is as it appears. So it really allowed me to go into some similar themes with this feature. So,
A chance encounter becomes a dangerous obsession when a mysterious small-time psychic offers a successful developer a way to reconnect with his dead wife. When Daniel, a successful real estate developer, must evict Nina, a mysterious small-time psychic struggling to provide for her young son, the last thing he expects in return is a free reading. But when Nina senses the spirit of Daniel's dead wife, a once promising artist, his desire to reconnect with her quickly becomes an obsession. Haunted by memories, Daniel is determined to reunite with his wife, who may have designs of her own. can't say anymore. I mean, it's just,
yeah,
and
if anyone wants a little more information or to stay posted, we have social media accounts that are somewhat new, but it'd be great to follow. It's Perception a Movie. Everything's at Perception a Movie. Mm-hmm. Facebook and Instagram, and then also a website, perceptionamovie.com.
Exactly.
And they can sign up for more updates and where we'll be screening.
You see, somehow, Ben, and I know you might sort of pour scorn on this, I feel this is going to have more significance for the human race than when you're promoting Sausage Party for Sony a few years.
I feel like it'd probably be a better program, to promote.
Not that we don't like Sausage Party and didn't have it moments in its origin, or indeed Angry Birds.
I don't think many people liked it.
but somehow I feel that, you know, with the line you got, like the artist, it's a bit like the Lady Killers, you know, I mean, the joy of that, and, you know, Phil may connect, he may not, he may try to connect, he may not be able to hear. We're on standby, Phil, so feel free to beam in on that.
So, Alex, I you know, since Caro is sitting here with me and it's his feature film debut, perhaps someone has a question for him.
We
Caro.
Very
hey,
much
how you
do.
Doing? Long time no see or hear.
It's good to connect with you, J-Ro, and it's fantastic. And how does it feel to be on the way to the premiere?
Oh, it feels so fun. I'm with my BFFs, and I'm having a great time, yes.
You know, it sounds so Californian. I mean, it's almost, if I was writing a script for a Californian filmmaker, I would actually sort of say, here, I'm with my BFFs, I'm having a great... Let's hand over to Becky. Becky, thoughts, questions for J-Ro?
This is just a general question, actually, but does this movie come to the UK?
We sincerely hope so. Yes. Okay. Is it going to come across the pond? Is it going to receive an airing within the British Isles?
We don't know yet, but we truly hope so.
Good. Well,
we'll have a meeting with Richard and discuss.
Oh, clearly.
I mean, Richard needs to be discussed.
It's very much
like a full review.
And from the Department of Strange but Important Links there, Ilana Rain once did a huge favour for Alan Stevens and put him in touch with some of the original cast of Battlestar Galactica, which enabled them to actually endorse the Alan Stevens Fiona Moore guide to Battlestar Galactica.
Wonderful.
As well. But that's because Ilana did We Are All Cylons, amongst other things.
It's not what you know, it's who you know.
Very mm-hmm. important. Just an all-round wonderful person. Are we still with J-Ro? Are you still with us, J-Ro?
Yes, I am.
Good. So in terms of, I mean, we've talked about the movie and so on, what's been the most challenging piece about the shoot? I mean, because clearly, in a sense, if you're directed by Ilana Rain, it's going to be magic every day. But have there been any moments where you thought, I can't cope anymore?
No, I never felt that way. I actually felt excited, but I was overwhelmed by how intense of a process it is with the lights and the people and the props, and I didn't anticipate any of that. Mm. But it was so well organized and so together that I was astonished at how easily I could just walk in and do my part and deliver my lines and be very happy with what happened. So everything I asked of Lolana, like, did you like that? Is that what you wanted? And she said, exactly what I wanted. So I was happy.
That shows that.
And, you know, we really owe a lot to the people and the state of Kentucky where we filmed last summer. They had a fantastic group of people who were our crew, hard workers, just super kind. And the state has had and still has a very generous tax rebate that funded a huge portion of the film. So, you know, that was quite an experience, and wonderful to film down there.
I'll tell you what, Ilana, can you guys stay online for a few more moments? We'll wait and see whether Phil does actually dial in via Skype. If he doesn't, we'll look to plan B26 or whatever. If you're okay to stay with us, we'd quite like to have a word with Brian as well, if all is working well. So stay online with us. Whereabouts in Los Angeles have you reached now?
We're still downtown. Now we're parked. Waiting to go into our venue.
Well, in which case, a couple more minutes, we'll see if we can actually have that sort of little greety. Who knows, Phil Leonis might be rushing now to actually attend the premiere, but I'm not sure that he's been invited. We were invited, actually, but that's tomorrow.
Oh,
and I haven't quite got the jet on.
Stuff.
It'll all happen. Okay, we say one step at a time. We'll also actually have a moment of, I suppose, somber reflection, celebration, actually, because unfortunately we lost another midweek drivette recently, and it was a midweek drivette who actually was very kind enough once to actually send a wonderful photograph back with Dean Hagland and with Phil Linus. Yes, Celeste Yarnell sadly passed away into the great, wonderful Star Trek world in the sky, but hopefully Phil Linus is with us now. Are you there, Phil?
Yes, that was sad news, wasn't it? I mean, not just the death of Celeste, but even, you know, maybe even more so, just the pain. I mean, I don't know if you read the updates that she posted.
Yeah. No, very much so. I mean, she went through a tough time at the end, and 74 is no age, but at the same time, well, hopefully she'll be looking down and still saying, well, at least I was a midweek drivette, so good stuff.
Yeah, and she brought so much joy, not just obviously to people through her acting and through her activism, but just everyone who came into contact with her. I mean, what a light this woman was. Just an absolute beacon.
Much like Sam Stone. Welcome, Sam Stone.
Hi.
Happy birthday, Sam Stone.
Thank you.
It is Sam Stone's birthday, and she's come to celebrate with the Midweek Drive and do the Stone Stains as well.
That must be mental. Not even a glass of wine in my hand. What's going on?
That's because you're driving, Sam.
And if the rumors are to be believed, and in show business the rumors are always true, Sam, you weren't feeling very well.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't.
Well, thankfully, we sent the positive vibes out, and she's here now for the Halloween special. Ilana, are you still there outside the theatre waiting to go in for this premiere, saying, thank the Lord we have managed to connect
one
part of Los Angeles with another?
Yeah, Alex, it's 10:40 in the morning on Wednesday, and our premiere is Thursday night at 9 p.m.
Yes.
So we're just doing like a little pre-scout of some of the area.
36 hours earlier. Sure. Why not?
Those people camped out outside the theater may not be for the movie. I mean, it is downtown Los Angeles.
Now, Phil,
are you in L.A. too?
Phil, I think, is in Los Angeles. Phil, will you be going to see the movie?
It's so crazy that you need to actually translate. Ordinarily, you have to connect me with people in L.A., but literally the connection is so bad that you're forced to do the translation from English into English. I might be seeing the movie. One never makes plans that far in advance. You know this.
Thank you, Ilana. You know, use the guilt factor. Ilana's seen Lady Killers twice. I've seen it once. You know, it's all out there from that point of view. I know Phil's saying, well, I'm getting married in February. Don't worry about it. It's part and parcel of the whole thing.
No, but the beautiful irony is that I would be going to Ilana's instead of to a screening of the Lady Killers. That's the beautiful irony.
Whoa. Which... oh, well, that could get very messy. Sam. How has life been treating you now that you've been... Well, I mean, what have you been getting up to since we last spoke a month ago?
Oh, gosh. Well, I've been getting up to all sorts of things. I've got myself a new literary agent now.
Wow.
Very, very happy about that. I've been not doing a lot of writing. I mean, chaos at home at the moment. The kitchen's been ripped out, and you can't even imagine how traumatic all of that's been.
Sam, out of chaos comes genius.
Yes, it's going to be nice, but still.
We know for
Did you select this new agent because you thought they would be able to help you with the kitchen situation?
Yeah, that's been a major fail so far.
It's a way forward. Ilana, have you got any questions you want to put to Phil or the rest of the folks, etc.? Go.
Just hope you're doing well. We actually, this person's waiting for us out inside, so we have to go. But Phil, I love the fact that you're in LA and that we have to use Alex to talk to each other.
Yeah. I feel it's that way in which you got two people in Los Angeles. Let's bring them together.
Go through LinkedIn.
Exactly.
Thanks for another country to reach each other.
And thank you for your support. And definitely follow us online. Perception of the movie, and for updates. And Alex, I'd love to be in touch with you about screening over in...
It will happen, Ilana. It will happen. In fact, I'm going to see if we can reverse that and see if Phil can ask you those last two questions. Please, off you go, Phil.
We just witnessed a production meeting on the air, and as you know, there's nothing I enjoy more than that. Alana, did you enjoy your telephonic link with Alex
and
that
J-Row.
I will have to and J-Row,
yes.
which I will have to avail myself of in podcast form?
Yes.
Absolutely. Right. Next question, Phil.
And can they look forward to you reporting back perhaps as early as next week about how the screening goes?
We would love to, yes.
Round of applause for Alana Rain and team and Brian and J-Row. And we'll let them happily go check out the theatre. Yay!
Did I just overstep my bounds by creating a programming problem for next week?
Create that programming problem, but I always like to say, Phil, no such things as problems, only positive learning opportunities.
Only no such thing as problems, only
That's
things that go
wrong. That's the teacher in you coming out there.
She's gone. Ilana has had to sort of go from that point of view. Hopefully it didn't involve her. Or would you like to share with us, Phil, what is that programming challenge for next week?
No, what is the programming challenge? I don't know.
By asking her if she would come back onto your show next week.
Oh,
to
Phil's just donated his slot to them. That's what's happened.
It's like giving an organ, giving a liver, you know, working on that premise. For those people who actually want to access it, that's Celeste back in 2012, actually, at a convention there with Phil Leonis. And Dean Haglund, of course, who's back in the United States of America and was
oh,
actually...
No. It turns out he's not. He's in Detroit.
Oh.
Fine. Well, see what you did there. That's okay. But we could look forward to all manner of wonderful things, including some quite surreal general walks through downtown LA, in which Phil, actually, in the latest edition of the Chill Pack Hollywood podcast, mistakes a nun for a Jedi Knight warrior or a Jedi warrior. I know.
That's true. Exactly. I guess
Phil, what happened to your Catholic what happened to your Catholic upbringing? For goodness sakes, you know, nuns, Sound of Music, not Jedi warriors. Different line of things entirely.
Oh,
well, they probably sing better as well.
In my imaginary Catholic upbringing that you've just given me, I spent a lot of time staring at the nuns, but I didn't get into the habit.
Oh,
thank you for allowing me to write some old material.
But if only, Phil, you had been present at the awards ceremony that Ben and I were at last night, that would have actually just made the evening, really. I mean, in that line alone, it was like light years ahead of what we were faced with.
Honestly, I think, Phil, had you decided to become a comedian overnight and decide to take the place...
The reins.
Exactly. Take the reins of the guy that was so-called comedian for
Business
that evening.
Awards.
I won't shame him on the air. No. I feel like you would have done a better job.
Was he the host? The master of
ceremonies? He was the guest host, celebrity, if you were calling that.
Black tie event. I've got a dinner jacket. Ben's got another dinner jacket. We managed to get both dinner jackets from that point of view. And lots of other people had dinner jackets and so on. And you're just seeing a career basically sort of just imploding.
It was an awkward room. There was a few hundred people. It was a bit like the Oscars, but then... But just a shambolic host.
Anyway.
Never mind.
Yeah, I'm going to have to break it to you, Alex. You know what? Hosting any awards is not a good gig. That is the last step of a career, pretty much.
It's a way. Thankfully, my own event, which is comparing the work of James Cook with James Kirk, which occurs as part of the Discover Middlesbrough event, will be perfectly okay.
Although, Phil, what about a dire celebrity TV show, like a reality TV show? That is really the brink of it, isn't it?
Every time Alex mentions James Cook and versus James Kirk, I'm always reminded that my local liquor store is Captain Cork, and I don't know which they're referring to, Captain Cook or Kirk. I really don't, and it doesn't matter, but I think about it while I'm drinking from their stocks. So
I shall pass the Discover Middlesbrough program over to Sam for a wonderful sort of perusal of Friday the 2nd of November, which I'm actually hosting, and you can actually outline there for the listener. And Phil, if he fancies getting into the jet, what this is going to be
Hang
all
on,
about.
Hang on, I'm going to need my glasses.
Oh, well,
my glasses, I think.
Makeup, excitement. It's the wonderful world of radio. At least we have kind of... Now, last week, Phil, did you hear us and we couldn't hear you? Was that the challenge?
Yes.
Yes.
You know, you could always call me. That's the other thing. You could use the phone to call me. You've done that in the past.
Which we had as a backup plan, but if you recall, with the excitement of the Mighty Rod, of course, the Rod Stewart scenario that was actually there, which Phil had confusingly thought was a different issue entirely. There was so much excitement there.
Yeah,
there you go.
Excitement may not mean what you think it means, but still, it was great fun, yes.
Are we settled now, Sam?
Just about.
Off you go, then.
Well, it's on Saturday, 3rd of November, 10:30 to 1 p.m. at Dorman Museum, Lithorpe Road, Middlesbrough. And it's Cleveland and Teesside Local History Society.
It's
celebrating.
Am
I reading the wrong one?
It's the wrong one.
Oh, it's the Cook versus Kirk.
The clue was in the line. Cook versus Kirk.
Oh, God, I'm having a blonde day. So it's Friday, the 2nd of November, 1 till 2.
Sam Stone is currently writing material written by Chris Chibnall in the fourth episode of Doctor Who.
Oh, let's go there. So this is a great opportunity to view the 250th anniversary of the Cook voyages through the lens of Gene Roddenberry's World of Star Trek, with some intriguing views on the legacy of James Cook to 21st century science fiction, and to vote for your favourite captain. Exactly. Sounds cool to me.
Well, there we are.
At least I got there eventually.
Exactly. Is it Cook? Is it Kirk? Is it Cork?
You know,
we might throw that in. It's important that we get there in the end. Phil, I'm not sure how much of the programme you actually caught, if any, or if you'd like to refer to last week, because obviously Becky is still with us from last week, so is Ben. We've got a Halloween special coming up for the Stone Tapes, which will be aired tomorrow night. No, it's exciting. Yes, it's even more exciting on that point of view, with a whole heap of other good things. And Sam, we threw this open, obviously, as a discussion for Alan Stevens. You heard him when you were driving in. What are your views on the Chris Chibnall era of Doctor Who, given that you were one of the key proponents who said Phil Leanness should be the next Doctor?
I still stand by that.
Well, I agree both that it should be a woman and it should be Phil Leanness. How that works, I have no idea.
Well, to be honest with you, the jury's still out. From my point of view, I'm loving the music, I'm loving the production, just as quite rightly as everybody else said, the scripts need a lot to be desired. I'm not that keen on Jodie's accent. It really jars with me.
Is that because he's from Lancashire and she's from Yorkshire?
I don't know what it is. It just sounds fake. I can't quite get my head around it.
A fake Yorkshire accent?
It just sounds real. I know it's her real accent, but it sounds so... I don't know. Her actual performance is very good, though, I have to say. And I really like her in that sense. But I find myself watching it going, oh, the accent. I don't know why. I just don't know. It does. I think it's because I've never really seen her in anything before. And I kind of expected a more sort of RP type of voice from her because she looks posh.
I'm really intrigued by this comment about it, a real accent sounding like a fake accent.
Yeah.
Because I have been part of a radio production, and one of the actors in it, a question was asked of me, is that actor's real voice? Because they thought maybe the reason the performance wasn't working was because the actor was focusing so much on the accent, on doing the proper accent. But then it turns out that, no, that's the real accent. It just sounds like someone focusing on doing an accent that's not natural.
I have the same problem with Jamie Murray. And also, because hers does not sound like a proper English accent.
See, for a moment, I thought you were referring to the Scottish tennis player.
No, the actress. Yeah. And also...
I get what you mean about her.
Kelly LeBrock as well is another one. It seems very, very fake English. I can't explain it. And both of them are genuinely British.
I think
sometimes it's probably a result of actors not having found the character yet and focusing way too much on the words.
I suspect is probably right, actually, Phil. I think you're right.
You know, because if you haven't found the unique – I mean, the truth is when you found the character, you don't worry about how to say the words or even the words that you're saying, because the energy of the character, when it comes into contact with the emotional reality of the circumstances they're facing, it's the energy that says the words for them. And when you haven't found that, all you're left with is what you say.
What you might like to hear, actually, because I do teach English three days a week in a high school, the students, particularly the boys, are loving Doctor Who right now. Mm. They really are enjoying the female doctor, and there's not even a sexist comment amongst them, which is lovely to see. Yeah. And they come in and talk to me about it. Yes, oh, miss, did you see Doctor Who last night?
I mean, let's face it, you have got Who heritage in more ways than one. Yes. This is authentic Who royalty. Sam, one of the regular Gallifreyan conferences and attendees and so on, and Sci-Fi Weekender. I mean, I almost have to say, if you wanted to really make Becky's evening, you could say, Becky, stay and join us for the Stone Tapes.
I was going to suggest it after hearing you on the radio on the way in.
She knows her science fiction.
I was actually going to suggest that.
Ben, of course, is also available.
You've probably been watching a lot of things that we've been watching as well, so I'm sure we've got lots to talk about.
There we are. It's a possibility.
Have you just put her on the spot now, Alex?
Yes.
I mean, did she not know?
She didn't know about this at all. You know, it's that kind of magic stuff that I kind of build up to it by saying, yeah.
Production meeting on the air.
I launched the sort of notion by effectively saying she's been replaced for next week because she's in London next week and the next sort of couple of weeks. But I thought, you might have a Stone Tapes there.
Why not?
And Ben is there as well. Ben, of course, who obviously puts on that
sci-fi uncultured when it comes to sci-fi, essentially.
You like Moonraker? James Bond. What
more? Yeah, but Star Wars at a push. But yeah. I mean, I'm old
and
Doctor Who.
David
I'm not
Tennant.
New. Yeah, I'll quit after that.
Very
I'm afraid
old.
I retired. So
okay,
It's got a reboot right now. I think actually I'm fascinated with the way Doctor Who's going at the moment, and I do think it's got a reboot. I really think it has, which can only be a good thing.
There we are. Becky, any questions you'd like to put to either Sam or Phil or Ben or anybody really? So. Take it away.
Oh, I have one, but it is still Doctor Who related. Who is your favourite Doctor?
Is that to Phil Leonis?
Everyone.
All right, let's go with Phil first, then.
Go with Phil.
Well, Dr. Phil, he's a self-help guru here in America.
Dr. Phil is about as much a doctor as I am.
Oh, Ben, such cynicism in one so young.
Ben, he ruined it for me because back when I was in school, that was my nickname was Dr. Phil. So
were you giving advice to people for their lives and everything? Were you?
But I do have a favor. I mean, I've talked about this before, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. But Tom Baker is Doctor Who to me, in the same way that Sean Connery will always be James Bond to me.
Sam.
Well, I have two favorites. Patrick Troughton in the classic, and I really liked Eccleston, and it was a shame for me that he has a very strong northern accent since I'm from Manchester as well.
Sam, lots of planets have a north.
Yes, exactly, and he's actually, I thought he was great. I thought he brought a lot of gravitas to the role. It was very grown up when he was in it, and I think we've gone a little bit backwards on that now because it's aiming at a different age group, I think. But I liked him a lot, and it was a shame he only did a year.
Well, it was contractual agreements. So he had to do Heroes.
Also, some great writing that era as well. Some really fantastic writing.
Ben.
I don't know if I need to answer, do I? It'll be David Tennant. Of course, David Tennant.
And Becky?
I think Tennant is... Tom Baker, I would have to say, but just of the sort of reboot generation, I would say probably Tennant.
Makes perfect sense. Tomorrow morning, of course, Richard Fitzwilliams, we've already pre-recorded his slot, and he's already chanted on about the royal wedding ad infinitum, really. So we'll be talking about a variety of other things, and he's still being booked for CNN and various other things to continue.
Babies, weddings, the lot.
It's just amazing what is going on there. William Sitwell will be back with us, of course, and a whole heap of other goodies. But Phil, still got a few more minutes, so whom do you wish to go to? What would you like to chat about? It's entirely
up
to yourself.
Wait a minute, there was another royal wedding?
There was. On
no
Saturday.
One cared about it, though, because it was just Eugenie. So.
Oh.
Bless her. I didn't see it, but I was so busy, so I didn't even...
Exactly.
I was
people took days off for Harry and Meghan's wedding, and no one really cared about
it. I still say, as a Richard, the wedding of the year... He said that was in my kind of solace mode, really, but never mind.
But Richard did make a point, didn't he?
Who is Princess Eugenie? Who is Princess Eugenie?
Exactly. Have you not
Eugenie and Beatrice.
Have you not heard of Jeannie Roddenberry? You know, Princess Eugenie is obviously a Star Trek, so daughter of Sarah Ferguson.
They spend
Duchess
lot of life
of York.
In America, don't they? Especially
Prince Andrew.
Beatrice
is
does.
The father.
Yeah,
though,
yeah. So, oh, you say that. Look, if they turned up wanting to be on the show, I'd consider them, you know?
And then ultimately reject them.
I feel quite sorry for
my question. My question wasn't actually rhetorical. Who is Princess Eugenie?
She's one of the Queen's granddaughters.
Yeah, no. She's Prince Andrew and Sarah Ferguson. is the parents. And you have to feel sorry for them because of that alone.
And there, in a toe-suckingly wonderful moment, is the entire royal family writ large, which is why I can't believe that America doesn't want to be part of us again, really. I mean, that's the kind of thing which builds the royal relationship.
Even Scotland is trying to get rid of us again.
When you say us, of course.
The headline that I'm reading in the Telegraph says, "Love wins as Princess Eugenie and Jack Brooksbank begin life as newlyweds." Love wins. I mean, did we think something else might win? I mean, what was?
Well, perhaps everyone was betting that Love would lose. You don't know, do you? Honestly, it's like a boxing match.
Is it?
I think
how would Love have lost? I mean, was it a Bachelor kind of situation? Did we not know who she was going to give the rose to?
This is up for discussion, I think, next week when you have a nice conversation with Richard to run through that kind of element.
I think I'd just clear the studio and leave it for about 3 or 4 days, really, to actually settle on that.
Yeah. Well, but we love when Love wins, and most of all, we love when it's in competition with something. That's the most important.
I sense the Lily Hollywood saga is going to be sort of featured in full force, really. Counting down the days, which is just wonderful. In fact, I was talking to Ben, really, about how do we actually package, and is it appropriate to actually send stuff to Phil before Christmas, after Christmas? Is he going to get there? Oh, there's so many strings.
Well, I mean,
when is the wedding, Phil?
Bring it, Alex, when you attend and emcee the wedding on February 17th. So just bring it. You did know you were going to emcee it, right?
Oh.
And be the event host as well. The stand up comedian.
Well, I'd like to help you out there a bit because I will be in LA at the same time.
Whoa!
I'll be there.
Well, there you go.
So I can bring your presents.
Some of them. I mean, there's only so many carry-ons you're allowed to bring.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Honorary guest.
The cookery is just too big, I'm afraid. I can't manage that on my own.
It's a strange and somewhat surreal world, as indeed the show has actually developed today, as we went from Anna Lewis in the London Underground to award-winning travel guide Gabo Candel in Seville, no less. William Coles didn't manage to connect with in the end because the lines to New York were already too busy, as I was told by the lady on the other end of the system. Mm-hmm. The lines to New York are not working. Who knows what's happening in New York? Whoever does.
Am I allowed to mention one upcoming wedding-related event?
Of course, royal one.
I'm to share this with you. You're all invited, for crying out loud. On October 27th here in Los Angeles, we're having an engagement party that is a Dia de los Muertos-themed engagement party because, as our invitations say, till death do us part is for quitters.
I can say no more. Apart from, how is Fuzz Aldrin taking all this? I mean, is she still sort of coping with the whole system? We haven't spoken about Fuzz for quite some time. And with First Man doing so well in the box office, I feel we need to give Fuzz a true airing, really.
Fuzz Aldrin is going to meet her brand new veterinarian today. Fuzz is actually healthier than at any time even before she got so deathly ill.
Just doing amazing. A round of applause
for Fuzz Aldrin, the feline who selected Phil Linners and Lily Holloman to effectively be a companion till the end of time. Alan Stevens, of course, he's just Alan. Fantastic. Just Alan, you know. Ilana Rain, of course, for Perception. Good luck with that. Jay Rowe, of course, and Phil Linners. Sam, I think you can do... Well, I suppose we've got Stone Toast coming up shortly. Ben, you've been... Because obviously you were in silent mode throughout the Alan Stevens role.
I felt like it was my best place not to speak because I don't have any... Like I say, I'm uncultured in this kind of stuff, so I don't feel like I'm... I justify my place on the on the seat here.
Would you like to put those last two questions? In fact, would you like to do one question? Sam can do the other.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Okay. So, Phil... Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today on this? Your Skype call with us today on the show.
See, he doesn't like science fiction, so the technical terms are a little. I enjoyed it. When do we begin?
And will you be joining Alex again next week?
Although I'm reticent to make plans that far in advance, yes. What should I wear?
Sadly, Becky won't be with us next week because it's a break of 2 weeks now whilst you go back to London to try and attempt to civilise the folk and explain what it is you've been learning up in true wonderful cultured land of Lincoln. Maybe not. Slight irony coming across there. Or maybe not. Maybe it's something completely different. But will you return?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes,
it's good. Okay, lots of exciting things happening, as well as the Siren Cinema Show, which comes up after 7 o'clock. We're off to do a Stone Tapes thing now. Phil, what would you like us to wrap up with? What would those final words be? How would you like to sort of see us off on a show which has gone from Doctor Who through Bats and the Birds and Chris Packham and more? We've got to obviously thank Emily and Kirsty, of course, as they were there. Yeah.
Well,
seems like a long time ago, but they were also part of the whole thing. Thank you, dear listener.
Well, I mean, I think the only way to sign off is with the two words, love wins.
Nice, like that. Okay. A one, a two, a three.
Love wins.